The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
So, good evening, everyone. I was swiping left and right to try to see all of your faces. It's wonderful to be able to sit together like this. And it's really amazing how much of our Dharma doings can be done online, you know, not quite the same as being all together. But still, there's a wonderful Sangha feeling in sitting with everyone online. So you can do Dharma talks online, you can sit together online, do Dokusan online. Liturgy is a little harder, and particularly the liturgy we would normally be doing tonight, because tonight would normally be, and when I signed up for this a couple months ago, it was scheduled to be a Fusatsu talk, so I thought I would make the talk Fusatsu-ish, even though we can't do our full Fusatsu ceremony. And as most of you know, the Fusatsu ceremony is the ceremony of atonement, being at one with both our unwholesome karma and at one with our inherent capabilities as Buddhas and Bodhisattvas to go forth into the world. And not so much create wholesome karma, but to be wholesome karma, to realize our lives in terms of saving all beings. That's the four vows. So if any of you have done the Fusatsu ceremony, and I see many of you have, judging by the faces, you know that the Fusatsu ceremony is very heavy on bowing. Very heavy. I'm not quite sure how many full bows we do during Fusatsu, but it's more than 30. Someone probably has the number. So I thought I would talk first a little about bowing. In the Fusatsu ceremony, we bow to our own capacities as Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, and so the majority of the bows come with being intimate with Shakyamuni Buddha and the past seven Buddhas, being intimate with Manjushri Bodhisattva, being intimate with Samantabhadra Bodhisattva, who represents consistency and effort, being intimate with Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, the energy of compassion. And we recite their names throughout the ceremony, and each time we say, I am one with, I am intimate with these various Buddha and Bodhisattva energies. And that's a good thing to say, you know. But of course, language trips us up a little bit, just a little bit. Because it gives us the idea that these energies are out there somewhere, and we're bowing to sort of let them in to pour into us. But when we bow, there really isn't any inside or outside. When we bow, we put our head down, and what's there? Well, just everything. There's just the bow. Really, when we bow to the Buddha, we are bowing to ourselves. We hear that over and over again. And you know, we tend to think that in our sort of split off consciousness that, you know, we're turning back to ourselves as if we've ever left that particular hotel. But no, we're just allowing it all in. We're saying we're not going to be split off. There's nothing to be split off from. It's all here. Here it is. The whole shooting match, right? So how does it come about that we feel that these various Buddha and Bodhisattva energies are outside of ourself? How do we sort of get to the place where the world seems to be out there and I'm in here trying to be one with the world? Well, you know, in our Zazen, we can see that rather easily. That's one of the wonderful things about our Zazen. You know, we sit and we, you know, we notice that our brain is spitting out thoughts, and we notice the thoughts, and we come back. And when we come back, it's just like when we bow. We get out of the way and everything is there, right where it's been all along. What trips us up is there's some kind of magnetic quality to the thought stream. So our brain spits out the thoughts and we feel that someone is thinking the thoughts. You know, we don't think that way about our the insulin being produced by our pancreas. We don't attach to that and create a self out of it. But somehow the thought stream causes feelings of separation. So how does that work? Well, you know, in our Zazen, there's a lot of stuff that is not problematic for us. You know, if we have our eyes three quarters closed, we just see the wall and there's no particular effort involved, assuming our eyesight is okay. The wall is just there. Any sounds that we hear come to our ears quite naturally. No problem there. And so with all the other senses, if there's something to sense, it just kind of happens automatically that we sense it. No issue. And even our thoughts, we notice, come and go quite freely. As we sit, thoughts just arise without any particular effort on our parts. They just arise naturally, and we notice them, and we let them go. So where does this feeling of a separate self come from? Why do we feel the need to atone, to be at one with? The problem comes up in that we have sort of a capacity of our thinking mind that wants to call balls and strikes, to make judgments on the various things that are going on. If we're having a peaceful sit, the judge, the umpire says, "Oh, that's mighty good. Let's have some more of that." And if our legs are killing us, or we're worried, feeling a lot of anxiety, "Oh, I got to let this go. Oh, I got to let this go." The umpire doesn't think that's such a great thing and tries to push it away. So this part of our minds is constantly engaged in grasping and aversion. We try to grasp the stuff that makes us feel good about ourselves, feel good about the world, feel good in our bodies, and we try to push away the stuff that causes us anxiety, causes us physical and emotional pain. We do all of that, this sort of very busy, judgy aspect of our minds causes us, it's what creates the self. It's what the Buddha and the Four Noble Truths pointed to as the source of suffering, this constant grasping and aversion and passing judgment on life as it arises. Would that it were easy to say, "Oh, well, okay, well, I just won't do that." That again is grasping after a particular state of mind that's supposed to correct this unfortunate situation. Trying to figure it out, trying to set some goal outside of our life as it's occurring and trying to move toward it, it just doesn't work very well, and just causes us to feel like an inadequate Buddhist practitioner on top of all our other woes and troubles and issues. How do we get out of this situation? Well, probably, of course, the most important way, the central way, the fundamental way, is to practice. And we have a very simple practice that allows us to do this, believe it or not, rather effortlessly, and it's called Zazen. And one of the first things they tell you in Zazen is to sit up straight in a comfortable straight sitting posture. And of course, my posture was always terrible. It's still pretty bad. When I heard that, I thought, "Oh, woe is me. I'm not sitting up straight. It's not going to work unless I sit up straight." Well, of course, that's not what it's about. What it's about is there's nothing that has to work. So why sit up straight? Well, it's just that when we lean, we're leaning towards something or away from something. In a way, in our bodies, we're manifesting that process of grasping and aversion that sort of adds this extra dimension to our lives and separates from our lives as they go on from moment to moment. So They tell us to sit up straight. And when we sit up without leaning in any particular direction, just as when we bow, everything is right there. There's no Buddha to pursue. There's no enlightenment to pursue. There's nothing in any of the 10 directions to push away or to pursue. And so we sit up straight. We notice our minds. We notice our thoughts. And we sit up straight mentally in that we don't judge our thoughts. We don't lean toward them or away from them. A thought about saving all mankind from suffering is a thought. We notice it and we let it go. We don't lean toward it. A thought about how horrible the coronavirus situation is just a thought. We don't lean away from it. We just notice our thoughts and let them go. This is the mental version of sitting up straight and not leaning in a particular direction. When we bow to the Buddha and Bodhisattva energies, we're not leaning toward them. And when we atone for our unwholesome karma, we're not leaning away from it. We're simply saying, we're simply sitting up straight and saying, it's all right here. I can manifest my unwholesome karma if I choose to do that, but I choose not to do that. I can manifest the Buddha energies if I choose to do that. They're all right here. They're all me. They are my life. And I can manifest them. We have choice. We have agency. And of course, we have the precepts that give us guidelines. I think I disappeared there for a second. We have the precepts to serve as guides on this journey, not a journey toward or away from anything, but the journey of practice, the moment-to-moment practice of our lives as Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. And so, in a way, we bow to the precepts. We are not separate from them. We embody them fully. Our lives embody them fully, right here, right now. Nothing is withheld. There's nothing separate from ourselves and our lives as they're ongoing from moment to moment. And Dogen Zenji talks about practice verification. So we do a lot of this, and over time we sort of get the feeling of it. And that judgy quality of mine begins to relax a bit. And actually, slowly we realize that grasping and aversion part of our mind that seemed so problematic, when it relaxes, it just allows everything in, everything to be there. There's room for the coronavirus. There's room for world peace. There's room for Uncle Henry and Aunt Martha and Donald Trump and Mahatma Gandhi. Everything just appears as our lives, as the life of Buddha. This is a wonderful asset to us in our vow to practice as bodhisattvas. Because when we relax the grasping and aversion, and our mind sort of reverts to its original open and luminous nature, we become much less reactive. I'd like to point to how that works by just talking briefly about the precept of not manifesting anger, not indulging in anger. So our friend Bodhidharma says, self-nature is subtle and mysterious. In the realm of the selfless Dharma, not contriving a reality for the self is the precept of not being angry. Not contriving a reality for the self. Well, that means simply just relaxing, if only a little, our tendency to grab after what's pleasant and to push away what's unpleasant. This is what the teachings tells us creates that feeling of a separate self. And it's kind of obvious when you think about it, because the world is just there. Our world is just there. The world of Buddha is just there. It's not anywhere else. It's just there. And by this and this and this and this, we feel that there's something we must grasp. There's something we must push away. And lo and behold, a self that's separate from the whole world appears, a self that's separate from Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha appears, just as a byproduct of the way we're using or misusing our minds, right? So Bodhidharma says, just don't do that. Don't create, contrive a reality for the self. Don't attach to your grasping and aversion. Notice it. Don't attach to it. Don't contrive a reality for it. And Dogen gives us a wonderful flavor of what that's like. He says, not advancing, not retreating, not empty, not real. There is an ocean of bright clouds. There is an ocean of solemn clouds. There is an ocean of coronavirus clouds. There is an ocean of the teachings and the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas. I was just reading an article about Abraham Lincoln a couple hours ago. There is an Abraham Lincoln. There is a Donald Trump. They're all here. They're all here in Buddha's world. There's no need to create a self by separating from any of it. And then in our Zen peacemaker order way of looking at this precept, it says, what does it say? Transforming some suffering into wisdom. This is the precept of not being angry. How do we do that? We don't become some kind of manufacturing machine. We just when we're able to sit with our grasping and aversion and just notice it, not act on it, we tend not to be dragged around by our negative reactions so much. There's nothing to push away. There's nothing to grab hold of. There's no person to boot out of the human race. There's no person to hold up as some high and mighty being who we must be like, or we're nothing, or we're just dust. No, it's all here in Buddha's world. It's all here in our world. This is the precept of not being angry, just being here with all of it. As my teacher Daido Roshi said, with the whole catastrophe, just sitting up straight, no Buddha Dharma to lean toward or away from, just bowing, realizing that we ourselves are intimate with the energy of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. They're nowhere else than right here. Realizing this, truly realizing this, we immediately heal ourselves and heal the world. This is a wonderful practice, and I'm so glad to be able to share it with you in this way.